You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 25th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. Cliff Schechter will be joining us. And to give me some movie picks or to defend healthcare.gov, Andy Kindler.
Maybe even both.
Or maybe he'll tell us a movie about healthcare.gov. Also on the program today, we had talked about it over the past couple of weeks, I think. But new reports of the slumlords, i.e. hedge funds, that are popping up all across the country. Meanwhile, former NSA chief Hayden talking a little too loudly on an Acela gets tweeted out by a former MoveOn guy, head of ethical energy, actually a friend of mine, Tom Matzey. Also on the program today, Susan Collins gets a challenge from a former ACLU attorney who wants to legalize marijuana. I know that'll make Jimmy Reefer Cake happy. Also on the program today, Governor Snyder from Michigan cannot say it's not okay to fire someone because they're gay. I think that was like a little haiku I think I just did. I don't think I even realized it. And also, PETA announces that they're going to be deploying drones to warn animals before they're being hunted by hunters. I'm not quite sure, but hunters beware. Yes, folks. You'll have to forgive me. I went out with a buddy who's in from across the pond last night, and you know, I'm just not used to going out and having a drink. Never mind three drinks.
What were you drinking, Sam?
Zima.
So intense.
We were sucking down the Zimas watching the World Series. Sadly, the Red Sox lost last night, but they wanted to make it a series so that we can add some more so my daughter can watch this weekend with some steaks involved. Folks, just a reminder, it is now October 25th. Credo Mobile is sponsoring this program. They are offering you, listeners of the Majority Report, a great deal that ends October 31st. You know about Credo through Credo Action, which has a network of more than 3 million activists. They fight against regressive policies. They fight against Tea Party candidates. They push Democrats to the left. They fight for marriage equality, against Keystone XL. They have raised $75 million for progressive nonprofit groups, 1% of revenues. They donate directly to outfits like Rainforest Action Network, Democracy Now!, the ACLU, Planned Parenthood. And their revenue also fuels their activism through Credo Action. You can join Credo Mobile today Go to credomobile.com/Sam. You get up to $350 credit on your Credo bill to pay off any change fees or switching over. If you have any costs of switching over from your current provider, they give you 25% off of data and true for 2 years and true unlimited data. So you can get on your Android phone that you can get through Credo, and you can listen to the Majority Report on the Majority Report app, which you can get, of course, at majorityapp.com. So check it out today. You got about 6 more days to get that deal. They're going to continue to sponsor us. I don't know what deal they're going to have for us after the 31st, but right now, up to $350 to pay off your current provider. Do it now. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Mr. Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Before we pop open a couple of Zimas and welcome Cliff Schechter to the program, let's first hear the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services? You know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com.
Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well, besides the little glitches in hearing you on the phone. I'm hanging in there, Sam.
Oh, can you hear me well or no?
No, I'm being a jerk and making glitch jokes.
See,
right off. I gotta go start off that way. With unfunny jokes.
You are caught up in the healthcare.gov hysteria.
It is. It's freaking glitch fever, baby. And I'm mad.
Are you really mad?
I'm thinking of maybe, you know, sitting too close to the TV set, maybe going to sleep without brushing my teeth, you know, the stuff that angry Jews do.
I understand. I understand. Wow, we can hear it. We can feel it from here.
This glitch stuff is. No, I'm not mad actually. I guess we might as well just get right into it. It's disappointing and rather shocking that the Obama folks handled this as badly as they did. But I guess when it comes to sort of marketing, this isn't really marketing, but sort of some of these types of aspects of their policy, they've been shockingly inept in the past, and so I'm not hugely surprised by that. But that doesn't change the fact that this is healthcare for people who need it, who have pre-existing conditions, and kids without healthcare, and people who've lost their jobs without healthcare, and people that have diseases that will make them blow up any lifetime limit, which there now won't be, on what they can spend and the rest. And so, as usual, I know there's a big war out there between people saying, oh, you can't criticize it, or, oh, you must criticize it. And as usual, you know, these two sides, there's always sort of a third, oh, I don't want to use the term third way. But oh, my God. But no, but there's always, you know, there's perspective here, which is that you can criticize it and say, why did you guys not do a better job on this? And at the same time, let's keep in perspective that this is ridiculous, that people, that most of people, that not most, everyone on the right who's flipping out about this are the people that just shut down the government over trying to defund these things, who are lunatics. And let me see. I'm going to do a quick, I promise you, in about 15 seconds, every 2 years of the Bush administration. Ready? Allowed 9/11 to happen, started the Iraq war, thought it was cool to allow Katrina to hit us, financial collapse. That's basically your every 2 years in the Bush administration, but glitches should definitely be investigated.
I mean, I think from my perspective, there's a couple of different stories that are interesting. I think obviously, look, a big part of this, I'm somewhat convinced, is just there's a bit of a news vacuum. And I mean, this is not to downplay the implications of this. And it's also,
it's balance too, Sam.
Well,
spent a month and a half beating up on people that are crazy and almost brought down the world economy. Let's find something. Where is there a way that Democrats are equivalent? Oh yeah, there's glitches. So let's talk about that. I mean, there's so much of that is coming from the usual quarters, the usual, morning, Starbucks and places like that that feel a need because they feel guilty. They've got guilty consciences because they beat up on Republicans and right-wing lunatics for the last 6 weeks. So they've got to do something to hit the left.
I mean, I think that's part of it. I think, and I think even the sort of more technocratic press, I guess, that is all over this, and as well they should be. But, it seems to me that the big story here, there's a couple of stories that are sort of being a couple angles, I should say, that are not getting enough attention. And just running them down is one, there's obviously a huge procurement problem with the government. Two, there's also, look, this was not the level of complication built into this system, which was necessary if you're going to pursue what amounts to a neoliberal version of providing something that could easily be far more easily be provided, but if the government didn't have to, rather than enable the private industry that was sort of collapsing the health insurance industry, rather than having to enable them, if they had just bypassed them. And there's a couple of good pieces on this. And on some level, I think, I saw some post that said that that Bernie Sanders had sort of, if not predicted the specifics of this, but predicted that this would be an issue in terms of why making this more complicated. And it was essentially to make it more complicated, essentially to placate, those people who feel like the free market is private sector is the best way to do this. Now, we should say,
isn't it great? It just adds to everything else, which is all the other ways that the original healthcare intent was sort of, the intent of what we wanted was bastardized to make people happy that would never support the thing anyhow.
Right, exactly. I mean, that is the sort of the classic dynamic that exists here. And there's, you can find pieces out there. I guess just to go over what is specifically wrong or what is the challenge here with this component of the Affordable Care Act is that you need a website, and really it's not just a website. What we're talking about is a data management system where people enter the front end. Because you have 36 states that didn't set up their own exchanges, you need to be able to take information from these from people in 36 different states. You need to first determine their income eligibility, which means that this information has to ping out to about four or five different agencies and then come back in. Then when you find out eligibility, you need to find out what possible private plans they're eligible for. In that instance, you need to then ping out information to the back ends of private insurance companies' sites, get that information and bring it back. And I don't know if you watched the hearings at all yesterday. I did at least some of it. And
wow, you've got a pretty interesting life.
No kidding. And
just messing with you. Good.
No, well, I mean, I think you're on to something there. But it was sort of a joke because we know that the Republicans are just using this not to get to the bottom of this, although they would love to find some type of scandal, which I think really the scandal is just that, we have procurement process that is completely larded up. It just made it that much more difficult to genuinely get to the bottom of it. But before people start to say, hey, this is something that should have been farmed out totally, particularly the sort of the oversight of the entire project to the private industry, there's about a half a dozen examples of this happening during the 90s and during the early 2000s, particularly with the Defense Department, which show that a private firm couldn't have done this any better. And
right. I mean, that's exactly right. I think we're on the same page here, Sam. Let me read you the beginning, just the first paragraph, very short here, of this piece. In 2011, when Barack Obama had only been president for 2.5 years, there was some other guy with some other name who was a Republican president for most of the decade. Here you go.
Hey, recently, remember me.
Quote, as much as $60 billion in U.S. funds has been lost to waste and fraud in Iraq and Afghanistan over the past decade through lax oversight of contractors, poor planning, and payoffs to warlords and insurgents, an independent panel investigating U.S. wartime spending estimates. There you go. This is the argument that needs to be had, the broader argument, which drives me crazy about, you know, a lot of the stuff that the left has spent the last 30 years retreating on, which is, you know what? Let's get some people in the left to say this. Government's more efficient. Government does it better than big business. They do. Medicare, 2-3% overhead,
right,
is what you're talking about. Yet we have to pass a law as part of Obamacare just to allow these guys to have 20%. Make sure there's an 80-20 ratio. And they're complaining about that. Had there been a public option, my God, if they'd had to actually compete with a government entity and live up to that, they would have never been able to do it, which is why a lot of them are probably scared of going out of business. We took something here, and by using the private market, we made it more complicated, and we put it in the hands of people that were much more likely to waste money and not care. And guess what happened? These things happened as we expect them. Just say the words Blackwater, Halliburton, anything else you want to say to yourself. And when we start privatizing vast swaths of our government, handing it over to contractors, and not doing it within our government, and having people who are there, no, not who are bureaucrats. Yeah, there are some people like that. But mostly people who are there who are accepting less money than they can make in the private sector because they care and they want to be doing things the right way. That's one big part of this, which is the argument that needs to be made that President Obama, frankly, sadly, hasn't made enough and should be made more by Democrats of all stripes, which is government does work. Government does help people. Why don't we list the million ways it's done that in the last century? And it's more efficient. So this myth that big corporations that don't know their ass from a hole in the ground are more efficient, I don't know. Ask J.P. Morgan how efficient they are. I love their kind of efficiency. You know, and then the other thing I would say is, to every Rand Paul type person that throws out of their mouth and still does it without a look to history, states' rights, just tell them to shut up. Because not only are we talking about the kind of racism, segregation, slavery, and everything else that went on because of their states' rights, but also, as this proves, states do not do it better. When you allow states to have their say, 30 of these states who just reject Medicaid and won't do anything to expand health care and won't run exchanges, and it gets put on all sorts of things get put on the federal government that they didn't expect to have to do. So let's have them expect to have to do it, because you can't trust states. There's some things that need to be standard across the entire country. Healthcare should be one of those things.
Now, Mike Konzel has a great piece out about the implications for liberalism in the ACA rollout, and he walks through essentially the four problems that. That the system is having. And he says the first has to do with the means testing of the program, because, and like I mentioned up top, the Government Accountability Office talks about this data hub, okay, which would determine means testing, essentially your eligibility for an incentive, a subsidy, which will ultimately go to these private insurance companies. And the data hub determines that. The data hub has to verify an applicant's Social Security number with the Social Security Administration, has to access data from the Internal Revenue Service, has to access data from the Department of Homeland Security to assess applicants' income, citizenship, and immigration status, those three entities. The data hub is also expected to access information from the Veterans Health Administration to see if you've got health care through them, the Department of Defense, the Office of Personnel Management, and the Peace Corps to enable the exchanges to determine if an applicant is eligible for insurance coverage. Okay, so these are all necessary to do this type of essentially means testing, which is relevant because we know how much means testing is pushed for other programs. The second issue it deals with, once you've means tested, then you've got to go to the back ends of all these insurance companies. The third issue is that with the sort of the failure of what's happening here is that this could create, because, and this is an interesting theory, and it's not quite clear if this has been borne out, and we're going to need more time to find out, but the people who want health insurance the most, we assume, are going to be the people who are the sickest or the most likely to be sick or have pre-existing conditions. Therefore, they're the ones who are going to continue to go back to these exchanges over and over again until they get the health insurance. That's going to create adverse selection. In other words, you're going to have risk pools that are filled with people who are a little more sick. And the fourth issue with this, of course, has to do with the fact that they've had to pick up so much, the federal government has had to pick up so much slack from the states that have opted not to have their own exchanges. We know there's some great success stories in states that have their own exchanges. And then he basically breaks it down. He says, is this a problem with liberalism, or is this a problem with what we normally call neoliberalism, or sort of market-based solutions, or solutions that are sort of market-based in conjunction with the government?
Right.
And he breaks it down into two.
Public-private partnerships.
Exactly. And he breaks it down into two categories. Category A is this one we're talking about, this public-private thing. And he says, one, it's heavily means-tested. Two, and remember, this applies for Paul Ryan's Medicare plan. This applies to the idea of means-testing Social Security. This applies to anything that you hear with the names reinventing government or that type of stuff. And so number one is heavily means tested. Two, it's provided by private agents to individuals. In other words, outsourced to private agencies, leaves open the possibility of adverse selection, gives discretion to the states to either help or undermine the process, is designed to ensure choice and competition. And then he says category B, which we would perceive as being sort of old-style big government programs. One, it's a program that is universal to all who qualify it for it. In other words, all Americans.
Right.
Two, has the government running the insurance system itself, uses compulsion to default people into social insurance to prevent adverse selection, i.e. Social Security and Medicare. Situates the program at a federal level to avoid states undermining it, does all this to ensure provisioning outcomes using government scale and efficiency. In other words, you know, Medicare, the 3% cost that you talk about. And one category is the market-based solutions pushed by the Heritage Foundation, adopted in this case by our body politic to deal with covering people for insurance. And the other is the way that we used to look at these things when we talk about things like Social Security and Medicaid, Medicare. And people should remember the one part of this that has been an unmitigated success is the adoption of Medicaid by states that choose to adopt it. In those instances, we are seeing hundreds of thousands of new people, millions of people, getting health insurance in a way that has not been problematic. And frankly, the conversation needs to be broadened. You know, I think we talked about at least earlier this week, Ezra Klein and Sarah Palin both made the point that this is just making the argument that a single payer would be far more efficient. And
right,
we need to hear people make that argument more.
That's exactly right. That's the conclusion that these guys, when they attack all this kind of stuff, won't come to, that it's just simple for our side. It's just the way convincing people of the program, if we had just done Medicare for all, would have been safe, easy, simple. You know, I mean, when you go to all these sort of hoops, and you know, you provide tax, you know, which is essentially neoliberal economics, tax incentives here, you know, and you give people their additional government funding there, and you do, in the end, all you end up doing is creating a sort of big patchwork system that lacks sort of an easy way to explain it, an easy way to understand it. There's so many moving parts, and inevitably, not only is it tougher for people to understand who are receiving it, but also those who are administering it. And, you know, I mean, a standard program from the federal government that affects everybody the same way, you know, I mean, that's, in the end, of course, that's what Medicaid should be, too. I mean, I don't know the legal issues with it. If I'm correct in remembering, that was one of the things about the ACA that the Supreme Court said, is that the Medicaid part of it couldn't be forced on states.
That's right.
I think the problem here is that Medicaid shouldn't have to be forced on states. It should just be completely administered by the federal government so they don't have a say because they're not involved in the process. Because why is it that you should be treated differently if you live in Alabama than if you live in New York? How is that fair? And frankly, how does that fit under constitutional protections of equality, for that matter?
Just to remind people, the issue for the Supreme Court in that case was that because the federal government was planning to expand Medicaid, they would have expanded it to cover people who lived up to 133% in poverty. The expansion basically came with, you've got to accept this expansion or you're going to lose Medicaid. In other words, we're going to change Medicaid. This is what it's going to be 3 or 4 years down the road. I mean, for 3 or 4 years, you won't have to pay anything to the states. 3 or 4 years down the road, maybe you'll have to pick up 10% of the cost, maybe. And the Supreme Court, in some type of bizarre ruling, I mean, I remember going down to the Supreme Court when they were hearing the arguments on this, and this was the one thing that I kept bringing up with all those people, and I encourage people if they're interested, go back and look for that show. I was down in D.C. and I kept asking legal analyst after legal analyst, like, what's this part? Like, how is this possible? And almost right to a person, they all said it would be bizarre for the Supreme Court to rule that way, because it would basically be saying, like, that it's you can't get, you know, it would be pulling back on the highway funds. You can't get highway funds if you don't lower your speed limits to 55 or raise your drinking age to 21, whatever it was. I mean, they said it was basically unprecedented. It's probably not going to be something that is in there. And I kept saying, well, why did they choose to hear this part? And the Supreme Court came out with this bizarre ruling, because had they shut down Medicaid and then said, okay, states, here's your new Medicaid option, it's going to include this increase, states wouldn't have a right to complain about it under this ruling. It was just bizarre. But people should also know that the implications of this, I think, are going to be a lot less when we're talking about this 6 or 7 months from now, because there's you can always extend open enrollment. You can also delay the mandate in specific states where people are having trouble with this, because they're not having a trouble with it in New York. They're not having a trouble with it in California and about a dozen other states. So there's a lot of different fixes, but most people don't get their health insurance until the last minute anyways, because that's just sort of been the trend, at least in Massachusetts. So I think a lot of this has to do with just filling time on cable television. But
isn't so much of what we do these days is exactly about that?
I think so. I mean,
I think it's the usual sort of wide variety of things at work here. You know, it's they need to fill time and there's a void. It's the fake balance, of the sort of centristy media. It's the right-wing media being sort of viciously angry, which is a general sort of personality trait for them, but even more so over the last 6 weeks, because they've been proven again and again what fools they were. All these people who said, yeah, shut down the government, that's a good idea. It's going to totally poll differently this time than it did in the mid-90s. They've collapsed to the point where people like Charlie Cook are saying that they could lose the House, not just those of us who lean left. But, you know, and so, I mean, they need something to try to change the dynamic. And look at what's coming up, Sam, and don't think that that's not a part of this, too, with people on the right knowing what's coming up, which is we've got President Obama talking about immigration now.
Yep.
You're gonna have the same split with the Chamber of Commerce and the business-type Republicans saying you have to do this, you know, and you're going to have the same lunatic fringe of the Steve Kings and the, you know, and the Cantaloupe Calves and Michelle Bachmann, Louis Gohmert, and those cast of cartoon characters are going to be screaming and yelling about terror babies and end times and, you know, and things of that sort, and which is going to just damage them that much more. And then in January, we go back to whether the people who want to shut down the government again, and there's going to be a whole bunch of them that are going to want to do that. And are going to try to do the same thing again. They may not have the numbers this time, but and it may not happen, but they'll still be interviewed by outlets, and they'll still be written about, and people will still see them on TV, and then suddenly there'll be the debt deniers, right? The debt truthers who in February will want to let that whole thing go crazy again. So it's not like there's a lot of really good months for the Republican Party up ahead. If they could sort of figure out a way to eliminate our ability to record things with video... I think they'd be in great shape, but barring that invention, you know, so they've got to take these shots now.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's a pretty clear, at this point, political wind blowing in their faces.
All right, let's. We only get about 10 more minutes here, and I want to turn to what could be the last time we ever have to talk about the grand bargain. I mean, I don't want to. I don't want to get too ahead of myself here, but this is...
I love the grand bargain. Now,
we know that this was something that was sort of bandied about, and Harry Reid, it really turns out, and there was an interesting story, and I don't know if you saw this, by Sam Stein and Ryan Grimm earlier in the week, that talked about what happened between Harry Reid and President Obama over the summer, and sort of laid the predicate for the way that Reid and President Obama dealt with this latest round of Republican hostage taking. Apparently, back in the summer, on July, Harry Reid and President Obama met together in the Oval Office, just the two of them. Reid was still pissed about the 2011 debt ceiling compromise because the White House had basically bypassed Harry Reid. They sent Joe Biden.
Good old Joe. Yep.
They sent Joe to sit down with Mitch McConnell. Reid complained about this to President Obama. President Obama basically said, look, you know, it was a different situation. I had different political calculation. The 2010 midterm elections had set the table for this, and I needed to compromise, and et cetera, et cetera. They came out of that at least with a better relationship, or at least a better understanding of each other. Harry Reid, I'm not sure, is quite so sanguine on this. He was asked about that. He was asked about, let me read this quote because this is. This is sort of classic Harry Reid. Asked about the meeting the day after the 16-day government shutdown was showdown was resolved. This was last week or 2 weeks ago. Reid acknowledged the disagreement over the 2011 debt ceiling strategy. Pausing for a few seconds, he reflected on how his relationship with the president has evolved. And he said, quote, President Obama is such a nice man. Just a nice person. And he became president during an awful time. It's easy to look back and say, oh, he shouldn't have done that, or he shouldn't have renewed the payroll tax. That's all then. This is now, a different environment. I don't want to sound like a cheerleader for Obama. He can get others to do that. But he's a good person. And, you know, there's Harry Reid sort of like...
I wish I could hear the tone of voice he said that in so we could know if he was being condescending or not.
I think he was basically saying, like, look, I still have my issues with the president, because I think there was a moment during the shutdown where the president tried to do this again. But the bottom line is Harry Reid came out the other day, I guess today, and we're seeing a lot of stories basically saying the grand bargain is over. But Harry Reid basically...
It seems like Harry Reid's saying, you know, this is just happy talk and it's not happening. Right?
I mean, yeah, that's what I no, he had a quote. I had it here somewhere. I mean, I guess I've lost it, but... He had a quote on Nevada radio that this is all happy talk about the grand bargain. There's no reason to be talking about Social Security or Medicare whatsoever. And it does seem that the deal that they're trying to get now is going to be much smaller. It's going to deal directly with the sequester. And I think this is Harry Reid asserting himself, and it could also very well be a function of, you know, having Senator Warren in there, having, you know, sort of a more progressive caucus in the Senate. And,
you know, I'll be interested someday in reading Harry Reid's memoir, because and I remember, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I think he was the one who was pushing hardest for the public option, too, who then got undercut. And yeah. I'm not saying that means he's right on everything. He certainly hasn't been, in my opinion, right on everything. But it does seem like in the last couple of years there have been a number of times he wanted to take a stronger tack and has been undercut by the Obama administration, which is sort of an interesting dynamic. And I think that's why that article, reading that article, was so interesting, because there's so much that's written about the personality, you know, the navel-gazing stuff that's just basically political gossip, you know, and doesn't. But this kind of stuff is important, because when you study history and you study politics, you learn how important, you know, you think that this is such important stuff that, you know, things as trivial as relationships and pique and whatever can't get in the way. But it does. And it often does. You know, these guys can't control their emotions just like so many of the rest of us can't.
I don't think this was about personalities. I think this was about, you know, political agendas. And, you know, the president clearly did not have an aligned set of interests as Harry Reid and what he was pushing for. And, you know, there was one of the elements of that was that President Obama didn't feel that Harry Reid could control his caucus in the Senate. And Harry Reid was like, why don't you ask me first before you make these assumptions?
I think, Sam, there's still some personality in that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. I mean, it's not a personality like ego necessarily, but it's people who some people are less likely to trust others than others are. And, you know, I mean, it's things like that that play into it. How much you trust people on your own side. I mean, what you're going for. And it's always helpful if you have these guys who are leading these fights can sit down together. And even if they have some disagreements, they know about them ahead of time. You know, which maybe they didn't. I don't know, because maybe they weren't talking.
Well, it's interesting because as far as I recall, Harry Reid was one of the guys who pushed then-Senator Obama to take on Hillary Clinton. And so it's sort of fascinating to see how that evolved over time. I would love to see that that memoir. And we should say there was one other thing that came out yesterday afternoon that also I think is going to really prevent and frankly, you know, getting back to what we were talking about the Obamacare, you know, when you hear Paul Ryan talking about means testing, the what's happening now in terms of the difficulty in doing that in the context of Obamacare, it should be noted that that's what, you know, Paul Ryan's plan calls for. So if you've got a problem with how complicated the Affordable Care Act is, from the right, and they're complaining about that and its inability to be executed, you should know that your boy Paul Ryan wants to do the same thing for Medicare. But
of course, right. His plans are not just complicated. They have the additional elements of being cynical, stupid, and full of crap.
Yes. And
so there's that, too, you know, just to keep in mind.
One more point to talk about what is put, like, I think the final nail in the coffin of cutting our social insurance programs. The CBO dramatically lowered its estimate of the amount of budget savings that would be gained from raising the Medicare eligibility age. I mean, we've talked about this in the past because, you know, you can raise the Medicare eligibility age. You may be saving the government some money, but you're not saving individuals money at all. They're going to have to go out onto the insurance market. That's going to raise premiums for everybody because they're going to add to the risk pool. However, the CBO found that it would yield just $19 billion, $1.9 billion a year to raise the eligibility age from 65 to 67, because basically people are healthier at that age than they had originally assumed, and the cost of having a 65, 66 year old on Medicare is just not great enough to yield you any big savings bump them off.
Go ahead. Sorry, I mean, this stuff is so stupid it actually makes your head hurt talking about it after a while. Yes, we should definitely get almost no savings from hurting people reacting to an absolute non-debt crisis while the deficits are going down the quickest since they have since World War II. But we should also do all of that while ignoring defense, ag, big ag money to Monsanto, subsidies there, subsidies to big oil, and everything else we waste our money on. We should ignore all of that during a time when we don't need to actually be cutting, but we should actually be spending to get more jobs out there. And we should definitely go after Medicare, where we can't save any money, but we can hurt people. So how many different ways is that stupid? I can't even count.
And mentioning the deficit, John Cassidy had a great piece last week that said, you know, we've heard President Obama talk about how he has cut the deficit in half since 2009. Cassidy argues that's actually understating how much the deficit has gone down, because it is now in 2014, it's projected to be just 3.4% of gross domestic product. That's down from 10.1% of GDP in 2009, when President Obama, basically took the reins, and they were dealing with the implications of the Great Recession. So the deficit has fallen at, frankly, an alarming rate, and we're seeing it its impact on our economy as we speak. But that's something that we will be talking about.
Pete Peterson pays people not to see that. So, you know, there's that.
All right. Well, Cliff, as always, a pleasure. We will be talking about those things, but hopefully never again, the grand bargain.
May it die. Finally die a death and I not feel be like we resurrected.
Should, we should be playing taps right now for it.
Oh,
I know. People are very excited. We're not going to be talking about the grand bargain anymore.
It's just a boring thing to talk about and a stupid thing that won't help anything. So let's just send it packing.
All right. Cliff Schechter, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Sammy.
All right, Cliffy. We'll talk to you next week. Folks, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we're going to come back with Andy Kindler, the I want to say the OG, but he's not the OG. He's the OOB, the original Obama bot. And see what he's got to say about this insurance exchange. And also, I want to play him some sound from Rick Santorum about how evil Hollywood is. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. All right, folks, Sam Seder, we are back on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure, despite his political orientation, to welcome back to this program Andy Kindler. Hello, Andy.
Thank you very much. You know, I'm touring currently under, to come see Andy Kindler, it's a grand bargain. That's my touring.
Really? Really? And how is that? I mean, do you are you must be touring with other people then?
Exactly, because it's a deal. Well, I'm in Portland, and I'm not someone who would plug my gig tonight at Helium. That's not what I'm about in Portland. That's not where I'm coming from. But when I pulled into the airport, well, I don't think I pulled into the airport. When I landed, I saw a Shiloh Inns van, and it said "Affordable Excellence." I thought that would also be a good catchphrase for me.
Affordable excellence. So you're playing at Helium. All right. Well, let's not spend the time plugging that. I've never heard of Helium.
No. My appearance there? No. Yeah. But I do want to tell you, Sam, I went on the Affordable Care site last night. It would not cure any of my diseases. Not one disease could I cure by logging on. I could not order lunch. You can't find coffee there.
Now, what diseases do you have?
I have high blood pressure, which is controlled by drugs that I take. But I thought they would give me a deeper answer than other people have given me.
I am not shocked that you have high blood pressure.
Hey, can you tell Ezra Klein to take a break, maybe take a couple of days off? Why is it? What it got into his snoot all of a sudden? What steamed his engine? What got under his hood?
No, wait a second. Now, so you're not saying that now you must get your insurance through one of our performing unions. Am I right?
Well, not only I get them through both. That's how everything is streamlined in my life.
You
I
get
have
it through
separate ones.
SAG and AFTRA.
I have AFTRA and SAG. I have AFTRA is my primary, and I'm sorry, how long were we both out for? No, AFTRA is my primary. SAG is the backup. SAG picks up whatever AFTRA won't take.
So you don't care about this. I mean, you haven't been on healthcare.gov, have you?
I have not been on healthcare.gov, but I don't want anybody on the left to complain about that website. You must stop now, stop whining, stop complaining. Get on the Obama bandwagon and just do what I tell you to do. Things will work out. We have a couple of glitches. This happened to Apple when they launched their thing.
What thing?
Sometimes when they come out, Medicare Part D, this happened with. It happened once at the DMV for me. So
what are you doing?
Get in line.
You getting faxes from the Center of American Progress or what?
I am not only that, I have a guy from the Center of American Progress right in this van with me who's giving me hand signals.
Now, Andy, I want to turn to this because I don't want to grill you too much. I know that I know how much you know about content management systems and front ends of blogs. but there is a piece of sound that has come to my attention from Rick Santorum that I think is absolutely necessary for us to get your feedback on because, you know, you're most famous, although you crop up everywhere. I mean, you're doing like some type of online thing with like a famous wrestler now?
Yes, Chris Jericho. I played just Chris Jericho's agent on, it's called But I'm Chris Jericho. He's trying to get into acting and I'm his agent. And my acting is unbelievable. I really have. It was called Serviceable, was one review.
Yeah, Serviceable. Okay.
Won't make you stop watching the program, was another review.
So,
too Jewy, though, is the general consensus.
What's that?
Too Jewy.
Oh, he's too Jewish as a wrestler?
No, everything. No. You just sound like the most Jewish man on the planet. What is he, a Jewish wrestler who doesn't go to shul? Come on, get up on the WWE. Get with it, Sam.
I've been trying to get him.
Matt is a big WWE fan.
In fact,
fan.
Sam calls it WWR. That just shows how much he knows.
Yeah, I don't.
I will throw a double eagle hold on you so quick that your appendix will burst again.
Do you do a lot of wrestling? I mean, do you do any wrestling on the show?
Just with my emotions. So I play his agent. I play the. What are you, the man who interviews someone but can't get any of the facts in there? What is this? Is it something you can get on the web? What are you doing?
Hey, I got news for you. I don't know if you ever watched wrestling back in the days of Lou Albano, but
Captain Lou Albano.
Albano. Lou Albano. But he got into the ring, buddy.
He got into what?
He got into the ring.
Oh, recently?
Well, no. I mean, back in the day. I think
he's been dead for a number of years.
He's quite dead now, but I'm saying that it's not unheard of.
He'd be terrible in the ring.
It's not.
You know what? I'm very familiar with him, and it's only in the Cyndi Lauper video. That's my only knowledge of him.
All right. Well, fair enough. All right. Well, so let's get to this.
I don't know much about wrestling, but I will learn next time.
All right. That's your way of trying to escape some responsibility for what's going on with this stuff, right?
You nailed me again, Sam. You nailed me.
All right, so
I don't know which way is up now. You got me so confused.
I don't know how you're gonna do your show tonight in Portland.
You got in my grill.
Are you still doing Bob's Burgers?
Yes, I am.
Well, how about asking a question when you go into one of these recordings? Where's Hugo?
Yeah, where is Hugo?
That's what I'm saying.
At every big party.
That's what I'm saying. Go in there and bring it up. All right. But look, wait a second. Let's get to the point here. You do every year one of the most famous, I think, repeated, and it's not repeated. You do a new one every year, but you do the State of the Industry speech at the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal. It is renowned throughout the industry. And because of that, I wanted to get your take on what Rick Santorum had to say when he was promoting the Christmas candle on the what is it, the Christian?
The Turner
Broadcast Network?
Trinity.
That's very different. The Trinity Broadcast Network.
Pardon.
So I want to get your take on this right now. Let's listen to what Rick Santorum had to say.
This is a tough business. This is something that we're stepping out, and the devil, for a long, long time, has had these screens for his playground, and he isn't going to give it up easily. And so I ask for your prayers for me, for our company, for TBN, for all of those who are involved in the Christmas candle, and we just want to thank you in advance for everything that you're going to do to help in making this a successful venture going forward.
So there you have it. Rick Santorum starting a production company, and he's admitting it's a tough business. He's saying that the devil has controlled the screens, I guess, of movies, I guess presumably also made for TV movies, for quite some time. Andy, you tell me, you're out there, you're in the midst of it. Is this true?
Well, if he's referring to Ari Emanuel, absolutely. That guy is the devil. There's no question about it. There's no getting away from it. Ari Emanuel, that's Rahm Emanuel's brother. What happened to your studio audience? That was a solid gold slam.
There you go. Well, I mean, do you think this is also true of television executives in general? Are they, is TV the devil's plaything?
Well, no, they're evil. I mean, no, look, I have many friends. I have a couple of friends. I have one friend who's an executive.
I was going to say,
I'm not one of these people. I don't paint with a broad brush. I like to use a roller. So I will say, I like what I'm saying. I just don't like where I'm going with it. So no, Hollywood can be evil. Some of these executives can be evil, but it's not based on the Bible.
Oh, it's not based on the Bible.
Yeah, they're worshiping money. And also focus groups.
Well, there you go.
Focus
groups
are the devil. Focus groups. You know those focus groups. They're in Vegas, not even in L.A. They're in Vegas. Yeah, but I don't think I have never in my life said the following words. I think Rick Santorum is onto something that I've never said before. He's also, how could he be worse on the air? How unsmooth is that guy? I mean, he's no Pat Buchanan.
No, there you go. Well, you just slayed Rick Santorum.
Yeah, he's not coming. He's not coming. Step aside, Dan Savage. Andy Kindler's here. Is that his name, Dan Savage?
The guy, yeah, Dan Savage, yeah, absolutely. The so now, Andy,
he needs a stronger first name. He needs like a Wicked Savage. Okay, this is my worst material so far on the call.
Wow, I was gonna say there's you just lost, I think, about a half dozen people in Portland. What's that?
Who I haven't lost already with my act.
Where else are you touring?
I have, did I tell you about, oh, I'm going to be at the Bar. Well, I'm here tonight, tomorrow, and I'm going to be at the Boston Comedy Festival in November. And then I heard that Hilarities, they haven't booked me yet, but they might book me for Thanksgiving weekend. And the reason why is I am known as counter-programming. Is your club, do you not anticipate a crowd at your club because it's a holiday weekend? Bring Andy in.
There you go. We just need a filler.
Yeah, grand bargain or lost leader, however you want to look at it. I'm not killing in the studio anymore. I was killing in your studio.
No, I think everybody just left.
What people are?
Everybody just left.
People on a break.
Well, yeah, everybody. we like those guys who book you on Thanksgiving. We also schedule a break during your interview. Andy, we just got a couple of minutes because I know you got to run into. What are you running into?
I'm running. I don't want to brag, but I'm doing a podcast, a local Portland podcast. I don't want to brag.
What? You're leaving this national podcast for a local podcast?
Well, yeah, but the thing is, the club had booked it, and I read the sheet wrong, so I could have told them, "Look, Mr. Sam Cedar wants to talk to me. All bets are off."
But wait a second. Are you aware that the podcast is probably not going to be released till after your show goes?
The one today is supposedly live, is what they said to get me in the door.
Yeah. Good luck with that, buddy. All right, you got 2 minutes.
Is this your new thing? You're slamming small podcasts now.
No, I'm not slamming.
Hey, when are you debate me, Sam? When are you debating me? You're afraid. You're scared, Sam, because I have no information, and you don't know what to do about that.
What? Give me a movie that I should watch.
Okay, well, there's a movie. This is a serious one. But These are not. Can they be something that's in the theater? Is that okay?
I mean, I would prefer not, but eventually it'll get to Netflix or Apple TV or something
like
that.
Okay, well, there's two of them. One is called Enough Said, which I just saw for real, which is Nicole Holofcener's new movie. She did Lovely and Amazing, Friends with Money, Walking and Talking. It's amazing. But the one that I'm really crazy about is the one I saw last night. And I don't know what the name of the movie was, but it might have been the greatest scene I've ever seen. Michael J. Fox is playing basketball. It's a young Michael J. Fox, and he turns into an animal somehow, like a werewolf. It looked great.
What? Wait, what?
You know, okay, he's playing basketball. Michael J. Fox playing basketball. And then he's not doing well. All of a sudden, he transforms into, what do they transform into where they look like a
werewolf?
Like
is he being serious? This is a pretty famous movie.
What is the movie?
Teen Wolf.
So here's what happens. Everybody, when he changes into the werewolf or whatever, they get scared first until they see him dunk. And then they're all on board. Boom, he wins the game.
Are you okay?
I took mushrooms last night after the show just to wind down. Just to put the edge on.
Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen. Andy, always a pleasure to have
this
you
was,
on
this
the
program. Hook up. You guys have you've upgraded your phones or something over there.
Why? You can hear us?
Usually you call me on a rotary.
I call you on a rotary phone. That's right. And today we called you on a push-button phone. Maybe the problem is your home phone. Maybe the problem is your home phone and not your cell, because we're talking to you on your cell.
This is crystal clear. Thank you, Nextel. I don't know what I'm doing. I love you, Sam. You're the greatest.
Andy, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, Andy Kindler. Andy Kindler.
Woo!
Leaving the... Oh, I didn't realize you were still on.
Woo! All right.
There you go. Now he's gone. Andy Kindler, folks. All right. Now, we have, before we go into the better half, we have a offering from Jimmy Reefer Cake from this week. I should tell you folks, you know, I went out, I said at the beginning of the program, I went out for a drink last night. I was drinking Zima's, watching the World Series. For those of you who write in, like, they don't make Zima's anymore. Well, back in the day, I bought an 18-wheeler truck full of Zimas that I keep warm, and I either take them to the bar myself in like a little convenient cooler.
Can I drink these if I have a side purchase?
Or I just bring them out and I put a couple in the fridge to keep cool in case there's any type of sporting events. But he said, you know, I got to tell you, like I listen to the show every day now because I'm in London. And partially because I'm homesick, I want American information. I want to try and keep myself from in any way getting involved in British culture. He's not finding it. He's not enjoying it. But he said, like, you know, I like this stuff in the second half better than the interviews. And I'm like, really? I mean, I found that surprising. Only because in my mind, I mean, the second half is more fun. We do a lot more stories. We take some calls and this and that. But I think that people really enjoy the interviews. So I'm really interested in hearing from people who listen to the Freebie podcast. I mean, I know we don't do that much banter in the free show, but if you want to hear more of it.
Shocking that people would like the half that we call the better half better.
Well, I guess I was more shocked about him in particular because I thought he was like I would have pegged him as I like the long form interview the best. But, you know, you never know. So I'm curious. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Let us know about that. Don't forget also, before we play this Jimmy Reefer Cake song, Credo is sponsoring us. You can go to credomobile.com/Sam to get a great deal on your phone service. They'll give you up to $350 credit to switch over. Then they'll give you 2 years of 25% discounted data. I've had people email me telling me they're going to save $400 over the course of 2 years. It's unlimited data. Our app works on those Android phones that they have over there. So check it out. Know that Credo is pushing an agenda that is more than likely very similar to yours. And they are supporting progressive nonprofits, in addition, obviously, to supporting this program to some extent as sponsors. So know that you can also become a member today at majority.fm in the better half of the program, as we call it. We take phone calls. We read IMs. I end up going on monologues about stuff. We have a bunch of banter. We have the Random Rush. I mean, all sorts of things that you're missing out. And, you know, I said to my buddy, I said, you know, how do you listen to the show? And he goes, I listen to the first 10 minutes. Sometimes I listen to the big interview. And then what I'll do is I will skip directly to the second half of the show. So for him, he's only getting 40, 50 minutes a day, but it's all the better half.
It's crazy.
It is sort of crazy, but you can do that very easily now on the app. So. All right, let's listen. What is the name of Jimmy Reefer?
He has a little email. Should I read it?
Yeah.
All right. The email is entitled Obama's Karate Kid Strategy. There's been a lot of talk on your show wondering about what Obama's strategy is, 13-dimensional chess, etc. I can only guess he's employing the Karate Kid strategy. Let the bullies kick your ass multiple times, getting more and more sympathy from the audience. Then at the end of the movie, nail them with the swan kick to the face. Anyhow, I can hope that he starts smacking those Tea Party freaks down. A great swan kick would be to block this dirty Keystone Pipeline. And the song is entitled Obama, You're the Best.
Wow. It's Obama Bot Friday on this.
I think it's a play on a certain song.
Okay.
A certain song that you performed.
Oh,
this song.
Oh, I sang this song.
You're Hugo, man.
As Hugo.
Yes, that's right.
This is exciting.
Is Obama gonna, after they shut down the government, holding our freaking economy hostage? He's been beaten down. It makes me think of the Karate Kid. Remember that movie? The bad guys, the bullies. Cobra Khan.
Sweep the leg!
But he had to come back. Joe Esposito, Karate Kid. Try and be the best.
'cause you're only a man, and a man's gotta learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you'll succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dreams. You're the best around, nothing's gonna ever take it down. You're the best around, nothing's gonna ever take it down. You're the best around, nothing's gonna ever take it down.
That's it.
All right. Well, here we go. Where's the, what happened to my applause button?
Can we get maybe a little bit of a Hugo rendition?
Do we have, don't we have the audio from that somewhere?
Somewhere. I don't have it available to me right now. We should get it for regular play, shouldn't we?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, we should put it on the soundboard.
How do we not have that? How do we not have that around?
Well, I had it on my computer, but as you'll remember, I lost a lot of things on my computer before.
Yeah, what happened with that? Did were we responsible? All right.
No, we weren't responsible. You weren't responsible for that.
Okay.
One.
Let's go into the better half of the program, folks. On Monday, we will have Mark Leibovich talking about our town on this very program. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. You can buy, if you buy Amazon crap, buy it through our Amazon link. It's at majority.fm. We've got the links to the Credo deal at majority.fm. And don't forget, October 31st, the deal goes away.
That's spooky.
Scary. Scary. All right, folks, 646-257-3920 is the phone number. 646-257-3920 is the number. You want to be a part of the program? You can IM me. The IM machine is up. What is the IMs? If you're on AIM, you're not on the app for some reason. You can get us at Majority FM on AIM.
Isn't it Majority Live?
No. That's the call on Skype.
Oh, that's the call on Skype. Got it. All right, so it's Majority FM on AIM. Got it.
Yeah.
And don't we also have Majority
Reporter on AIM?
No, well? Also Majority FM at jabber.org.
MajorityFM at jabber.org.
And that's a good one if you're not on any other sort of instant messaging service.
But just get the app. It becomes very easy.
Yes. At majorityapp.com.
Wow. That's really gone, really got the plugs going.
Majorityapp.com, folks. Progressive talk anytime.
All right, folks. We'll be right back after this.